and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Bokelman.
I'm Mark Marble.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 626.
A feedback episode, finally.
Yes, predominantly a feedback episode. Nothing says Thanksgiving like a feedback episode. and absolute Green Lantern.
Yeah.
The gift that keeps giving.
Yeah, why don't you tell us all about it?
All right, so as we're recording this, it's 10:24 my time, so we have about to 10:34 to finish up our discussion on this. So this is the ultimate bare bones discussion of Absolute Green Lantern 8. This is otherwise known as the Joe Origins issue. So we get all Joe's background in this issue. So we find out about she and her father moved to Evergreen from New York after her parents got divorced. Her father was kind of a hard ass, never really happy with who she was associating with. Always teaching her restraint was the key to life, and which is kind of funny because didn't like her friends in New York, didn't like her friends in Evergreen, and of course one of her friends in Evergreen, one of her early friends, was Hal Jordan, and of course Hal Jordan didn't have any restraint or willpower, according to her father. So that was his problem. So you see Jill grow up. She ends up becoming a cop. This is a little too much of a trope that almost so many people that have ties to DC, the real DC universe, all happen to be in Evergreen. And we kind of talked about this one, the idea that, hey, they could still do Black Hand, as in the guy. They just can't have him be Black Hand anymore because they already just tied that into their weird way of doing the emotional spectrum stuff. And sure enough, William Hand is the corrupt racist police chief in Evergreen. Guy Gardner's there, who like, I don't see anything, don't ask me. Renee Montoya is there, and she's there to tempt Joe because this Joe seems to be more gay than bi. There's a shocker that DC would probably go down that road. But Joe is always struggling to do the right thing, and she's struggling to restrain herself. You see her words of her father come back to her all the time. She kind of, you know, she and Renee kiss, but she resists. Hey, that's not really who I am. William Hand is, as the police chief, is corrupt, and he's basically shaking down the entire town for protection money. John Stewart doesn't play that game, so John's thrown in jail, and that's when Joe kind of realizes what's going on. So she quits. She ends up going to Coast City. That's where she meets Cam, who her eventual wife. And again, this is where we get seen them tie the horrible use of the Green Lantern oath into their wedding vows. But Cam's always busy with work, so Joe's out there, gets bored, feels resentful. She ends up coming back into contact with Renee Montoya, so she has an affair and she's cheating on her wife. And this is all segue to eventually she comes back to Evergreen because of her father's funeral. Then she goes back and she reconnects with John Stewart. She starts working with John Stewart as his assistant. And this all leads to, you know, the scene that we saw like friggin' 3 issues ago when she shows up with a damaged Hal Jordan at Cam's doorstep. Well, literally this issue ends maybe like 1 second after that, because Cam lets her and Hal in through the door, and that's the entire issue. So 3 issues basically just to go in real time to go from like where we were at the end. Not a bad issue overall, but then again, compared to last issue, you didn't need much to be a step up.
Yeah, a lot of talk on social media about this one being the best issue of the series for a lot of people, and I would probably tend to agree here. There's a lot of personality, in-depth characterization. I like the random haphazard slapdash adding in William Hand as a guy and then naming Mark Shaw, who is the Manhunter in the DC universe and stuff like that. It's take it or leave it. I think at this point, that's just something that they're going to do no matter what universe we're in. It's something they do anytime we have to play with a new universe or somewhere out in the multiverse. We have to have our version of XYZ, even if it doesn't make sense and we're just name dropping at this point. It seems like just a fact of multiverse storytelling as opposed to, you know, something that some people do and something that others don't or whatever. It doesn't seem like there's any rhyme or reason to doing it these days. I think you can appreciate it when it's done cleverly. But other than that, the fact that it's going to be done is a given. But her struggling with, you know, living up to the expectations of her father and trying to do what's right and keep her head down and get the job done versus, you know, breaking out and being herself and all that stuff, and hey, she's our main character. So taking the risk to paint her in a bad light by having her cheat on her wife and stuff like that, that's, you know, having a main character with some faults, that's okay. You know, she's not wholly likable throughout the entirety of the thing. There's some depth there. And the art as well is more straightforward this time around because we're not dealing with the magic crazy zaniness of the power or of the Black Hand or any of that other stuff. So I don't know. I agree with lots of people out there that this was probably the best issue, but I'm sorry, you already lost me. Too little too late.
It is a nice contrast to see that this Joe is being written as flawed as opposed to how we know our Joe gets written all the time. So yeah. It is kind of nice to see that contrast. And Jo is drawn very well. She's drawn very hot. She doesn't look anything like body-wise like she did in Far Sector.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe this will be time for the junk in the trunk insert for the audio.
What happened to that thickness?
But there is no she's not drawn that way. She's drawn sexy, but she's not drawn that way. Yeah, I mean, it adds a little depth to the Cam character, too, other than the chain smoking, which is so gross. But at least you see there's arguably, other than being a workaholic, she's the one who seems to be more dedicated to the relationship, really, at least willing to see it through. But then again, it's kind of easy, objectively, it's easy to say that when you're not the one who's ever around anyway. You're always gone. So, but I don't know. I liked it. I did like it overall. I shoehorning so many people into this and that seemed a little matter of fact. I mean, I could almost buy it if all these characters were in at least Coast City, but having so many of these characters being evergreen.
Yeah.
That was a little much. I did like the fact that they established that in this universe, Hal and Joe are childhood friends. And that's kind of their connection. And they play up some Hal Jordan like qualities. Oh, he wants to be a pilot and then he wants to be a space cop, and which is, you know, but the fact that he changes his mind all the time, he's wishy washy and, you know, he has no willpower, no restraint. It's like, that's kind of insulting. But obviously we know how they're not given, but they're not painting this Hal Jordan in this universe in a positive, bathing him in positive light. So, but it was a good issue. But let's see what, once they pivot back to all these ans and ours and things like that, it's probably going to go straight back into the unreadable crapper list.
Yeah. I mean, but hey, this is what I was talking about. There's good Al Ewing and there's bad Al Ewing. And this is good Al Ewing. He's showing his chops here. And it's nice that you know, some of you people out there get to see it before we descend back into the madness again.
it only took 8 issues.
But all right, that's it. And that's what we mean, guys. That's as much as you're getting. We're not even titling this episode that we're talking about Absolute 8.
I know. And if it wasn't for the fact there was such, well, A, it was self-serving because we have an email related to this series we wanted to do. But besides that, if it wasn't for the fact that this actually was a relatively likable, straightforward issue, we probably wouldn't have even spent the slightly less than 10 minutes on it that we did.
So where are we going now?
We're going to do some, shocking as it may be, we're going to do some listener feedback. And there's There's one waiting for you, Chad. Anas has one with your name on it, almost literally, because it's related to Al Ewing and Absolute Green Lantern. So why don't you share that with the people, Chad?
All right. This one is a little lengthy, so stay with us, guys. This is from Anas from September. And he says, "Hey guys, it's been a while since I last wrote to you, not counting private chats, and it feels good to do that again. I want to share my thoughts on Absolute GL with you, and to do so, I'll have to lay some groundwork that isn't GL related, so hopefully you don't find it boring. Al Ewing is without a doubt a capable writer, and as a person who has read almost all of his Marvel and DC work, I definitely enjoyed a lot of his work, but when the GL was announced to be about Joe and involving Jon Stewart, I was worried because of a few things known about Ewing that sadly influence his writing. Al is always seen by Marvel, and lately DC, as their go-to guy when they want to have a book featuring a black character or a gay character, but when he was writing Avengers, they literally gave him an all-black Avengers roster because the pitch was basically, what if we had an Avengers Black Ops team who are all black, pun probably intended by Marvel, and slowly he became the definitive writer they have for Monica Rambeau and Blue Marvel. That stuff was generally okay, not his worst work, but not atrocious either, but it was certainly affected by either making the gays and black characters, especially black women, almost perfect beings and stripping them out of what makes them relatable and compelling. I say almost because at that point, from time to time, he would write these characters well, and you'd see them as humans and not gods. Then Immortal Hulk happens and becomes one of the best comics out there for 50 issues, and then Joe Bennett, who is the artist on all of the 50 issues, gets canceled for being a supporter of the Brazilian right-wing party, which made Ewing noticeably afraid since he had to issue weird apologies on social media and letters pages. And then came the era of Ewing that we live in, and that's the Ewing I'm afraid of cancellation era, which brought out the worst in Ewing since when he writes men or anything that doesn't involve women, black people, or LGBT characters, he writes them well. But when any of them become included in the book, the book suddenly becomes terrible. A recent example to that is his recent X-Men Multiple Maxi series, which are really just one book getting relaunched multiple times because it wasn't selling. The first series was a regular cosmic book that was doing well till it included Storm, and it became about how awesome and perfectly perfect Storm is. Then the relaunch made it clear that the book shifted from a cosmic book to a Storm book, which made it lose readers quickly thanks to the super low writing quality of the book. And finally, a Storm and Magneto book, which was considered good since it was more about Magneto, and thus it was okay to write a book about a character and not a god. When DC announced who was going to be the star and supporting cast of Absolute GL, I got worried, but thought that DC having better editorial staff would maybe make the book better than Al's Marvel work. Yes, despite its flaws, DC editorial is way better than Marvel's. And somehow I was both right to be worried and right about the editorial mandates, making Ewing a bit contained, thus giving us a better than what I expected book. Absolute GL is the same quality as Al Ewing's pre-Immortal Hulk work that's just a nothing burger that's about the gay and black lead who is not as unbearable as was expected. Al Ewing's Loki and Guardians of the Galaxy were the same since Al's focus on them was to have Loki, Hercules, and Star-Lord come out as bisexual. Star-Lord being into bisexual marriage is a canon thing that Gunn is probably sad that he never got to play with in the MCU. God save you from this one, Mark.
That's the best. That might be the best line in this entire email, which is a good email, but that's probably the best line.
And we're nothing burger of comics where they got quickly canceled, although they were ongoings. And the most messed up example of that is probably Guardians of the Galaxy that was canceled after Al wasted 12 of the 18 issues he got on literally nothing. Anyway, that's a long mail that hopefully finds you well and hopefully doesn't bore you to death.
Yeah, that's interesting insight. It's more of an email for you is because you've actually read Al Ewing stuff while I have not. And you were be careful what you wish for. You were all giddy about him writing this book, which, you know, on some basic level, all kidding aside, I could understand if I actually was overly attached to somebody, a writer or even an artist. Let's say artist is easy. Let's say Daryl Banks. Let's say, even though, of course, if you're the artist, you are kind of a slave to what the material is that you, it's the art can still be great, but the story could be horrible. But we would be excited if Daryl Banks was drawing a regular regular DC book, regardless of who was writing it or maybe who the main character was. But it doesn't mean we would eventually really like the book overall. We might appreciate the art, but, you know, if it's a character we don't care about or it's being written horribly, then the great art might not matter. So it's kind of the same thing. You may like, or you may have been excited that, hey, I like this writer and he's writing a book about a character that I like. But sometimes it's like the bizarro peanut butter cup, two bad tastes that taste bad together, or two great tastes that just taste bad together. And it's like, that's not going to work. And I don't know. Interesting perspective, because you can absolutely see the point that some of the points that he's trying to make about previous Al Ewing stuff just by how this book has gone so far. So this would be an example of how he's talking about, and you mentioned too, the good Al Ewing, when he kind of reins it back, it's like, hey, see, this person's not perfect. But he's also right that the majority of the book so far has been to kind of clearly to make Joe and John seem pretty perfect and everybody else be really, really flawed. Even Guy, who seems to be less flawed than Hal, but even this issue says, well, you know, Guy pretty much knew about William Hand's corruption and his shakedown operation for protection and just looked the other way. Don't get me involved. Don't ask me. Keep me out of this. So, which they even refer to at the end, because Guy's the one who calls Joe to let her know that her dad died. And when John and Joe are reconnecting, he kind of gets like almost like a backhand compliment from a guy gets a backhanded compliment from John when he's talking to Joe about, you know, John, you know, Guy's pretty really, he's good at this job, but I mean, unlike the old days when he didn't stand up for anything, and when I always appreciated the fact that you did. So you can kind of, you definitely can see his blueprint there and say, well, I can understand, even without reading the rest of Al Ewing stuff, how if you've read it before and you've noticed these things that, yeah, there are some boxes that are being checked.
Yeah. So I don't have the experience that Anhas has, at least in terms of, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy and the X-Men stuff and all of that that he's talking about. My experience with Al is primarily Boom Studios, We Only Find Them When They're Dead, which is a fantastic book and is definitely helped by the fact that the artist throughout the series is Simone DeMayo. And it's indie. You're not tied down by continuity. The art is fantastic. The synopsis, just real quick. Captain Malik and the crew of the spaceship Vian 2 are in search of the only resources that matter, which can only be found by harvesting the giant corpses of alien gods that are found on the edge of human space. But their obsession with being first to find a living god will push his crew into the darkest reaches of space and many decades into the future, where the universe has changed in ways beyond comprehension. Rival religious factions clash throughout the galaxy as the crew of the ship is on a quest to discover once and for all the origins of the gods. Will the lines between humanity and the divine blur even further? So basically that concept we got from Guardians, where the movie where they're mining the celestial head for valuable resources and stuff. This is a whole sort of there's a whole system of commerce where these entire bodies of alien beings just sort of appear in our universe, but they're always dead. Hence, we only find them when they're dead. The thought being that, what if, is the resource even more valuable, more potent? Is there more to offer when they're alive? You know, that sort of a thing. We don't know where they come from either. There's the mystery of that. So it's just like discovering a whole new, you know, realm of being. But it's interesting. It's curious. It's really well done art wise. So it sucks you in. And then, of course, coming out of why am I forgetting the name of the event with Null and the Venom symbiotes recently in the recent ish past? You know what I'm talking about?
King in Black.
Yes, King in Black. The Venom series was then co-written by Al Ewing and Ram V. I was following it because of Ram V, and I was happy
Of course you were, Chad.
And then I was happy to continue reading it because I was familiar with Al from We Only Find Them When They're Dead. So my experience with Al has largely been positive. I bet I've read things by him that I didn't like and just didn't realize it was him because I wasn't paying attention to the credits, because that there are books I follow. And then there are books I just, you know, read because I'm like, oh, you know what? I want to try issue one or two of this because, you know, X character is in there and I want to, maybe this is enough to get me going or, you know, whatever. It's entirely possible I've read bad Al Ewing before, but we only find them when they're dead in Venom are my really only experiences with him, and they've been largely positive ones. So when we found out that he was going to be writing a GL book where it was outside of continuity, so we didn't have to worry about what we knew, what we didn't know, what was in continuity, what was out, and that we could just sort of be free to experience this thing in a certain type of tone and setting, that was all for that. And then it became the confusing mess it is, which seems to be intentional, which I don't like. So hence good Al Ewing and bad Al Ewing.
Yeah, I guess that kind of sums it up. So let's move on to a Monty one.
All right.
Luckily, this is real easy and not as timely, other than the fact that it's still comical to a certain extent, or it reminds you, makes you think about stuff. I guess that's what it comes down to. But Monty, this was from actually St. Patrick's Day, which tells you how horribly behind we are. Just popping in to say happy St. Patrick's Day, direct from the Emerald Isle itself. On this day of days, I find myself wondering why there is no Irish Lantern. Kyle was once half Irish, but I don't know if that's still true. And I count Percival, but we haven't seen him in ages. That's all. Have a great day. And of course, I pointed out about Kyle that it is still canon, but I don't even think they remember that he's half Mexican at this point. It's funny the stuff they conveniently don't remember about Kyle. It still drives me up the wall that they brought all these damn Guardians back, and they just had such a beautiful opportunity to tie it into the Ion stuff. This is the power Kyle has to always bring back the Guardians. It's like his gift. You know, he's always the torchbearer for that reason. It's like, no, but they didn't do it. I guess they could still retcon it at some point and say, well, the real reason they came back is even if Kyle wasn't consciously aware of what he was doing, but going back to Kyle's roots would not be a bad thing.
Yeah, that's true. And there's nothing wrong with him being half Irish and half Mexican.
Oh, of course there's not. But no. But the fact that nobody seems to remember either half anymore.
Yeah, I forgot about Percival because I'm always talking about God, and I keep forgetting his name. The guardian, the evil guardian in Ganthet's tale. Because the last time we saw him, when he quote unquote died, the artistic effect was very close to that of what we saw, at least in early Geoff Johns run, when someone would just cross over into the antimatter universe. It looked like they were dissolving.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. So Dowley, right? Yeah. Yeah. We called him Dowley. So Dawlakispokpok, who was married to a Zamron and had two children, but we called him Dowley for short. Dowley should pop up, I think. I every time Krona reappears, I'm like, well, what about Dowley, or what about Old Timer?
Yeah,
he's the Mad Guardian.
Yeah, all the opposites. He is a character that has surprisingly been left dead and buried because he's way, way, way overdue to make a return.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'll team up with Krona.
Maybe.
That would not be the worst.
I pulled up Percival. I forgot. So it says here on the DC.fandom site, after being instated in the core, Percival remained in Oa's Citadel to take care of the recuperation of the new Guardians who were kidnapped by Entropy. And then it says Emerald Twilight. Years later, after the destruction of the Green Lantern Corps, Percival was one of the scores of powerless Green Lanterns captured as part of an interstellar slave ring. He and the rest of the Green Lanterns were rescued by Guy Gardner. Apparently, this is sometime during... This is Guy Gardner, Warrior number 35.
So it's definitely in the Kyle era.
Yeah, for sure. I finally was able to collect all the issues of Guy Gardner's series. I got the last one or two, maybe 6 months ago or something like that, but I haven't sat down to read the whole thing. But I know that's later in the run, right? It ended like late 30s, early 40s or something like that.
Guy's book? Yeah, it was something like that. I forget exactly when, but we had to be getting close without looking it up. I think we were definitely in the home stretch at that point.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. There's lots of stuff within Ganthet's tale that should make a comeback. And I don't know if they will, because I don't given the whole nature and how they keep playing with the story of how the hand appeared and everything like that, and keep changing whose hand it was and stuff like that. Is Ganthet's tale even considered in continuity enough by DC to bring any of those characters back?
Well, I mean, if they did the tie into Millennium, I don't see why they wouldn't do that.
Mm.
Looks like 44 was the last issue of Guy Gardner Warrior.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, so it was shortly after Underworld Unleashed. It's in like half a year after Underworld Unleashed.
Very, very 90s.
Yeah. The annual was actually the last issue, apparently, of Guy Gardner Warrior. That came out like about a week after Guy Gardner 44. Was that him shooting Major Force again? It almost looks like he was. So who knows? It would be nice to see a lot of these characters come back. And again, it is whenever not that it's that often, but whenever we go down the Chrono Road, because of course that was everybody's big guesses when you saw the guy at the end of Blackest Night and heading into war, you know, the war, the brightest day into war, the Green Lanterns. When you saw this little guy, mysterious guy gathering entities, you kind of figured out he was a guardian. And so that made it one or two choices. It was either going to be Krona or it was going to be Alyopsa. So it is interesting.
My vote was Alyopsa because Krona was never small. And then we figured out about the rapids. Yeah.
Well, it would have made sense he would have been small in the sense of based on the concept that they were all, you know, I mean, if they were normal height to begin with, and then is that the mythology? They were normal height and then they got smaller.
So they were normal height, and then they sort of, you know, throughout the millenniums and devoting themselves to more intellectual pursuits and developing their mind, they lost the development of their physical bodies and they sort of atrophied. But because Krona and his machine and his sins, or whatever you want to call what he did, happened early on in the Malthusian's development, he was reduced to disembodied energy and, you know, sent, you know, cursed to, because they didn't believe in the death penalty. They were, you know, they just ripped his soul from his body and sent it out in the universe in a never-ending course where it somehow ended up in the antimatter universe. But basically, anytime we saw Krona, it was always as we saw him in Green Lantern 45 when we first got introduced to that story. He was a regular, average-sized Malthusian, yes. Not a full-blown guardian.
Yeah, regardless of what, like you said, whatever body he ended up, or the whole entropy thing and everything else, it didn't really matter. It still was just his essence. So I guess that part's being consistent, even though he was trying, because even now he was trying to grow a new body. It just wasn't his.
Yeah, that's true.
Been there, done that. All right.
So all right, what's next?
Let's do another one of Monty's God. This is January. This one's relatively short. So hello, Lantern Cast, and a happy new year to you. I feel so bad about reading these now. So I caught up finally and now wait for and devour every episode as it emerges. I'm going to shorten these emails just a little. Wait till you've caught up. Here we go. Before sending another, except this one. And also drop those quotes because they don't really fit. And drop, I guess he means really drop as in doing those quotes, because they don't really fit the format. The point of these emails were always to pay you guys back for keeping me company for a couple of years. So if you're finding them a bit long or a bit too frequent, as I guess, then I'm happy to adjust. Let me know if I'm wrong. We appreciated your emails. We have not gotten to any emails, not because if it's you or anybody else, we've had so much stuff on the plate. It's like, it's just, there's always been something to talk about. And then we don't like to shortchange people when they actually write us. So anyway, a while back you asked about YouTube and what the viewers would like to see. I don't think putting your entire back catalog would amount to much. I see on CGS's channel their old episodes have very few views, but you have some excellent and interesting episodes that stand out, namely your spotlight on Future Lanterns, Parallax, etc. I forget some, but there's a bunch. And the interviews, all these would be worth putting up. although tidying up a bit in the appropriate imagery a la Dan, if you can be bothered, it'd be worth it, I think. And Shazam, you might be able to rope in some regular listeners. Since my first letter, whichever one that means, I always meant to state my appreciation for one Corwin Kroll. From his first appearances, I always got the impression he's a cool customer, and I started listening to EMP, yup, from the start because of that. It's a lot of fun. Got to mention Podcast of OA 2 because I started listening to them too. Yup, from the start. That quote, which I guess I don't think we remember what it was. It was from Legion, from Emerald Dawn, which is another villain that is way overdue to come back when you think about that. And lastly, I read the Alan Scott trade of the recent miniseries. Scott's good for you. I'm not ever going back to that. And quite enjoyed it. It required some serious elephant in the room ignoring, but I ended up realizing that Alan needed some character depth because he really hadn't been used as much more than one of the old hands of the JSA. I liked that each issue had a different focus while feeding into the overall story instead of those long, drawn-out epics. Looking at you, main Green Lantern title. Still appropriate. Right, that's it. Talk to you later. I guess that is looking at the bright side of the Alan Scott series, I suppose. But
that's true.
Yeah.
About YouTube, I hate video editing. I've said it 1,000 times. That may change whenever I have my new computer up and running, because as of right now, my 2017 MacBook Pro is crashing like every other day. And that's just having two browsers open. I can't imagine actually trying to work on and edit a video right now. So having a system that's more powerful, can do things faster, easier, funner, maybe if I use a different type of program, I don't know. Anything could change. But I don't like the idea, because I wouldn't want to half-ass it. Like, we could put those episodes that he mentions, the spotlights or the interviews and stuff like that, on there. But I wouldn't just want to dump them and leave. I'd want to do something with them. And I'm sorry, but I'm not going to half-ass it. So why do it at all?
No, I think that makes perfect sense. I mean, in all honesty, probably the best bet, which creates, well, more for me than for you, but it has to do with I probably need to upgrade my camera. And then the mic, and then the question is which mic to use. Oh, I know we can technically use the camera and not use the mic on it. But either way, the point is of all that rambling is that our best bet would be just if we were going to try the YouTube thing, probably just to literally do just an episode in which we did do a video on it too. So it was released in both the normal audio only platforms, and then we could put it on YouTube as a video representation of it too. So that would probably be the best. I would say that's the most likely thing to happen. But again, we still have the video editing issue, because I don't really think on this, I don't think I have any real video software, editing software on my computer of consequence. I don't think nothing as quote unquote advanced as like Audacity, at least. So I don't, you might be able to clip this and clip that, but if there's an issue, serious issue, then I don't know how much we'd be able to do, but that would probably be, I would say, what we're more likely to try first, just do at least one episode or a rare episode in which we kind of release it in a video format as well.
It's also difficult, I think, especially these days, for editing and the various places you can find content on, for instance, because you wouldn't want to say, you know, there are certain buzzwords and stuff. Like, instead of saying porn, a lot of people are using just the word corn as a stand-in for saying the word, so that, you know, any automatic bots out there that flag for, you know, adult themes or any of that sort of stuff or explicit content or any of that don't accidentally flag the wrong content. So people say corn instead of P-O-R-N. And so people, you know, they don't refer to offing yourself, you know, in any form, because saying those types of things can auto flag your content depending on where you post it. So just adding another place to post our stuff, it just gets complex in trying to make sure we're saying the right thing. If we use a clip or a music or something, like, we have to worry about copyright and things like that. Not that copyright shouldn't be something that we don't worry about at all, but there there are different rules for copyright, whether it's in video format or audio format or whatever. And I just, it's a hassle the more places you put stuff out. And is it maybe worth the return on investment in terms of the time spent to learn those things and put our content out there and reach more people? Maybe. But it, as of this moment, it just sounds like a massive headache.
No, I can certainly understand that. I would say that it's more time and effort to put into producing what we already produce, and sometimes it feels like there's a lot of that anyway. Even though it's, again, it's the Dorothy Parker quote applied to podcasting. Oftentimes, it's, at least for me, it's like I hate writing but love having written. So it's like I don't always like doing it, but I like having done it. So adding more layers to the editing process, and then
and that stuff I just talked about you know using fun, cheap little cheat words to refer to something as, so you don't get flagged. A lot of people, especially content creators who do those sorts of things, catch flack from people for like being too woke or PC. But that, in that particular case, those people are doing it because the platforms that they're running actually make them money and get them sponsors and get them. It's a source of income for them. So it's worth them protecting their image. It's worth them protecting and saying the right thing to not upset the wrong people and so on and so forth, because they're making money off of it. This has never been something that's going to make us money. We would love to draw a paycheck for this, but we do, as we've said before, when it comes to this particular topic, when this topic circles the bend, it's a podcast about a comic book character by a specific franchise or by a specific publisher and a specific franchise of characters within said specific publisher. We are so narrow focused, quote unquote, that how do you find advertisers for that? How do you find sponsors? How do you find people willing to pay to have us advertise their product, their service, or whatever? You know, a lot of people do like, you know, those food services where they deliver the meal prep for you that you cook, and it's got all the things measured out and whatever, and or they do DoorDash or Grubhub sponsorships or whatever. Like, is somebody like that going to find value in advertising on our show? Likely not. So we don't have to be as cagey as people who actually are making money off of things. If we find a way to do this as our job, which I would love, I don't know about Mark, but I wouldn't mind doing content production. The rules have to change. But right now, we do this for fun and we do this for free. So we do what we want.
Yeah, for the fun. Gee, that's great. Oh, God.
All right, next email.
Do at least one more.
Okay, let's see. Oh, okay. We just read this one. Okay. So Danny?
Yeah, do Danny.
Okay. Danny, on December of last year, said, "Hey guys, just saw the new Superman trailer. Was wondering what you both thought of the first proper look at Guy Gardner. Me personally, I don't know if I can handle live action bowl cut, although it doesn't mean I'm not beyond excited to get another GL on the big screen. Hope you guys have a good Christmas and all the best for the new year. Daniel from Scotland."
So we got Ireland and Scotland in one episode.
Scotland forever.
We're bigger than Europe. We are.
have you ever seen that hilarious animation that someone did on YouTube where it's like a super quick recap of the events of How to Train Your Dragon?
I don't think so. No.
It's hilarious because every time Hiccup's dad is on screen, all he does is just scream in a very loud, to the point where it's intentionally like a mic peak, "Scotland forever." he never says another word. He never does another thing. It's just anytime he appears, he is just hollering "Scotland forever" at the top of his lungs. Anyways, yes, this is late, but yes, we enjoyed it. Like I said in the episode that we had where we covered the actual movie, I don't think, short of casting somebody else in a, you know, a younger person or whatever, I don't think anything was wrong with Nathan Fillion's Guy Gardner. No notes. I said it in the episode. I'll say it now. No notes.
Actually, Danny was right. There's no way the haircut was never going to work in live action. We should edit in, talk about making more work. Make it sound like we answered this back in December. I mean, or like shortly thereafter, like, you're right. There's no way it's going to look anything but crap. No, it was Guy Gardner was definitely one of the highlights of that movie.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Do we want to wrap up with a Monty?
I reckon so. Let's go for it. I'll do Monty's, and that'll be the end of our feedback for tonight. So we did take care of a bunch of feedback. At least now it's manageable, so we can, when we have time, we can knock off a few of these, and by the end of the year we'll be all caught up. Not that far away now, so it may sound like not much of a promise, but we are in the middle of November. God, that's scary unto itself. Good day to you, sirs. Well, I've had an excellent time listening to your responses to my feedback over the past few weeks. And then we had the gap. I started off with quite a large time limit for these emails, and glad I quickly toned them down to about 40 minutes. You made a jokey comparison to Stephen King, which I appreciated, as he's one of my favorite writers, but I can't make them any shorter. I noticed that sometimes I'm in a rush to get to the next point, so I kind of fly off the handle. As with Alan in my last email, I basically spent a year not knowing how these would be received, so I'm happy to have such warm responses. Face Evil's Might, geez, it seems obvious now. I couldn't figure that out, so thanks. And anyway, I was extremely lucky to find a bunch of 70s GLGA comics at a secondhand bookshop for contacts that haven't seen back issues in this city in over 20 years, as well as a few other oddities. The Guy Gardner Reborn Mini and a Ham and Collateral Damage. Everybody's favorite. I might just have
we
to
don't
get...
say that word on this show.
Well, we use the you can use the phrase, but we can't use air bunnies and put it in quotes with capital C and D. So Monty says, I might just have to get that to see for myself. But I was reading the 70s stuff and realized I was enjoying the experience much more than anything I've read from modern DC. Maybe it's that Denny O'Neill is such a consistently good writer. Maybe it's because there was a fun letters page and other stuff like Answer Man. I was thinking lately that I might just be getting old, join the club. But reading this old stuff reminded me that it's not me that's the problem. So I'm going to be phasing out my new comics buying over the next while. No more events or miniseries. No more having to pick up a bunch of other stuff because it ties into what you're buying. And if something good does come out, I'll hear about it and get to trade. That seems to be more what DC wants anyway these days. I have a love of everything DC from the 70s up to the new 52, so I'm going to focus my collecting there from now on. Probably a winning proposition at the moment, to focus in on that time frame, I would suspect. Plus, it's pretty broad.
Yeah.
I'll also be getting GL stuff. Dark is off to a good start. It's interesting now that we've finished it. I like how self-contained the first issue appeared to be, and I'm still reasonably excited for Absolute Green Lantern, ba-dum-bum, and the Green Lantern Corps next year, but my God, I'm just so bored of the main Green Lantern book right now. We needed a grand gesture. We got that, in my opinion, with Sorrow. I've taken to calling Nate that, as he kind of names himself in the comics, and it makes him seem more guardian, or at least torchbearer in power levels and thus potential. But then we haven't seen anything of him in ages. We got a special, the first one since the Sinestro Corps War special. Oh dear. Well, that was never going to be a favorable comparison. I always feel bad for bringing it up. Yeah, we know there was nothing special about those specials so far. Speaking of Denny, I got a giant The Question omnibus lately by himself. Dennis Corwin and Rick Mager?
Dennis Cowan, you said Corwin.
Oh, did I Freudian slip? Dennis Cowan, yes, I'm sorry. Well, there's a second shout out for you in one episode, Corwin and Rick Magar. And wow, really amazing stuff. There was something about the grittiness, experimentation, and reinvention in the late 80s and early 90s that has never really been seen since. And I was delighted to find they had reprinted the entire letters pages in the back. DC could do with having a good look at what made the other eras so noteworthy. Despite my dissatisfaction, I think someone at DC is thinking smart with the restoration of Vertigo and the compact editions being both good signs, in my opinion. And finally, I will have fully caught up by next month's email. I'm at the Deadpool and Wolverine episode. I'm going to be swapping to just one of the guys for my daily podcast. Sean impressed me greatly in the latest episodes by not only using a track from my favorite band, Metric, but referring to soccer as actual football. Hearing an American say that really made my day. Monty. And he's got another quote.
Yeah. Yep, which was from Legion, I think, right? Is that the sequence of things, or did we miss one in between?
I don't know, but the quote in this one was, "Abin, you are only one, and yes, it's got to be Legion. Abin, you are only one, and we are. Stop this. You are finished. You are dying. And as we were about to say, you are only one. Well, we are. Oh, Abin, no." It would make sense as Legion.
Yeah.
Since that was kind of Legion's mantra, we are Legion. So, and that's that.
Yeah. GLGA stuff. Yes, fantastic. As we all know, I have a great affinity for that stuff, and I have a unhealthy hero complex with Denny O'Neil. So, as much as Mark groaned when I mentioned the name of Ram V, I hold Denny O'Neil up to a much higher standard than any of the others I have ever mentioned. So, yeah, we know that and Julie Schwartz. But that's neither here nor there. I love some GLGA. I think my GLGA, not the entirety of the run in terms of when it was called Green Lantern, Green Arrow, up to and including the stuff past Neil Adams' involvement. But I'm pretty sure I have every single issue of GLGA for Denny O'Neil and Neil Adams, except the first one, which I believe is 76. And also, I don't have, I think it's 88. 88 is a reprint issue, which is why it's not usually included in collections of Green Lantern, Green Arrow. And I believe that's a cover, if you've ever seen it. It's got Alan on one side and Hal on another. I have a hard time paying. Yeah, it's Alan on one and Hal on the other. And there's the yellow pterodactyl between them and stuff like that. It's a reprint issue. It's always going for more money than it should be for a reprint issue, simply because it's a part of that historic run. And I'm just waiting to find a seller who gets that, I guess, because I have a hard time spending Green Lantern, Green Arrow issue levels of money on something that, yes, is technically a part of that, but is in essence a reprint. And then, of course, 76, the first one where, you know, he shoots the power battery and blows it up and all of that stuff. That's one of the most iconic issues outside of either John Stewart's first appearance or Speedy doing drugs. And I will look, anytime that issue shows up, I'd say it's a good deal if it's $350, and it's usually $400 or more. I haven't checked in a while. It's probably gone up. It's one of those issues where you're not going to get lucky and find a decent copy that someone doesn't know what they have. It's too iconic for that. And anytime I have a spare $400+, I have something better to spend it on, unfortunately, or more important to spend it on at the very least, than completing the Denny O'Neil run. So I am not complete, but I do wish it so. But I've got my collected editions and stuff, so I have access to the material. And maybe I'll come back to doing the Green Lantern, Green Arrow podcast at some point soon. I've talked about why I haven't before, because the next one we do will be John Stewart's first appearance, and I feel weird as a white guy comment, because the goal of that show was to just comment on the historical importance of what was being discussed in the issues at the time, because it was such a socially conscious series, while also combining it with coverage of the actual content. I feel weird as a white guy talking about the importance of diversity without at least somebody else there to really anchor down that point. So I need a co-host for that, and I feel weird asking people on that premise. I don't know. It's a touch and go thing. But I agree with you. Unfortunately, I haven't kicked the bug of collecting in terms of, finding, for instance, Justice League Red coming out. It's got Simon in it, but it also has Deadman. I picked up that first issue, and I'm going to pick up, the series and stuff, because I'm a Deadman fan. But I also went out of my way to find a Deadman specific cover that was really cool, because it was the only way I was going to get that piece of art. So I don't know. It's hard to kick that collecting habit, but good on you for doing it.
That is definitely true.
Yeah. And speaking of the question omnibus, I also got the question on omnibus. I love it. It's great. It's fantastic. And I think he's right about the 80s. There's that experimentation in the 80s of the question. And then, the bigger example, obviously, being Watchmen, and you having things that really would go off the rails and go crazy, like Sandman, and James Robinson's Starman, and things like that. There were just these random, gritty, ethereal, magic-y sort of things that just sort of happened, and just sort of expanded the lore, you know, Hellblazer and all of that stuff. I don't know that we've seen anything, because, you know, they say things come in cycles and stuff. Have we seen anything like what we saw in the 80s in comics since?
I think it depends on one's perspective. Probably not, but as generally speaking, as in like that for time periods, no, I don't think there's probably was anything as consistent that we've had since.
Yeah. And also, finally, he gave a shout out, just one of the guys. Sean passed away several years ago. It's a great podcast to listen to. It's still out there. Also, you know, one of many reasons I'm choosing to have lots and lots of storage space on my new computer is because I do want to archive some of the stuff that may disappear someday, like Just One of the Guys. I want to keep the Just One of the Guys episodes. I also want to keep all of our episodes in case one day we have a server failure, or, you know, something like that. You never know. It's tech. Tech can fail, whether it's software or hardware, whether it's within a device or online. Failure is inevitable at some point. So I would like an archive of stuff, and keeping, you know, content backed up somewhere is something I want to do, including stuff that's not our own content, like Just One of the Guys and stuff like that. So, you know, plus we did crossover episodes, or we would appear on someone else's show, and that, you know, years ago, and that show maybe just stopped putting out content, and they, you know, didn't want to pay the hosting fees anymore, so it just disappeared off the internet. That happens, and it will happen again. So I'd like to save some of those episodes, and so that we still have them for ourselves and all of that. And, you know, as morbid as this sounds, if I die one day, I am slightly comforted by the fact that that my family would have this massive archive of me talking at long lengths of times for shit they don't care about, but who they can go back and listen to at any point. So, like, you know, there's lots of good reasons to have this shit backed up everywhere and to reflect on.
No, I agree. It's sometimes we need those triggers for reflection, and obviously that makes sense that this kind of brought back a lot of memories.
Yeah. Just one of the guys. I was just thinking about that the other day because somebody had posted online about the power of Ion, and I remember getting a chance to talk with Sean about one of the issues when he covered the power of Ion, because I remember listening to his show as it was coming out of then, and knew that he was coming up on power of Ion. And I kept hyping it to him and being like, dude, because he hadn't, I believe the in most cases, Sean hadn't read the stuff that he was getting to as he was covering it. He wasn't like going back and reviewing stuff that he had read before. It just either he had never read it or hadn't read it in, you know, 20 years or whatever, and had thus forgotten it. But I just remember just telling him, oh man, I can't wait till you get to Power of Ion. And I hyped it up so much that he brought me on to cover one of the issues of Power of Ion. And that popped up in my memories the other day. It's a great show. So yeah, if you guys aren't listening to it, like Monty is / was, you should find it out there. Two True Freaks Network, I think, is what it's called.
And I'm looking at this. There was actually one Monty email that we should have done before going in chronological order about episode 600, which is now over 25 episodes in the tank.
Well, we don't have a counter yet, unless you have something else. You can edit.
I do have, and we have to remember. I'm trying to remember what time we started. I promise Monty will. But besides, because we're almost up. We're almost up to the Jamie episodes, the Jamie email. So this is going to this is going to be your pride and glory. It's like Chad's moment in the sun. So we got a whole bunch of We have a whole bunch of those coming. That's the majority of the emails we have left. So I think we'll hold on to Monty's just because it'll be a palate cleanser.
Thanks.
At least for me. Two. All right. So let's call our feedback session. Call that a wrap. All right. So two quick things from what I have seen. Theatrically, I saw The Running Man. Saw that last week. It's okay. It wasn't anything special. I think Glenn Powell was really good in it, but the movie itself was okay. I mean, it's not like the original was fantastic. Or, you know, it's just kind of like cheesy 80s. Arnold kind of makes that movie. Even Richard Dawson kind of makes that movie too. But this movie really doesn't. Yeah, it's technically truer to the novel, but it's not. Does that necessarily make it more interesting? Maybe. Maybe not. It's certainly. There isn't anything that really happens in the movie that's not predictable. And I say that even if you probably hadn't watched the original, that the dynamics in play from the very beginning of the movie, when you start getting some of the twists, is probably not much of a twist. I would say Glenn Powell is the highlight. If you like Michael Cera, which I don't, you know, his part in the movie was kind of good. I don't have her name in front of me, but the actress that plays Glenn Powell's wife is gorgeous, and she plays that role well in this movie too. Everything he's doing for his family. And one thing I saw on HBO Max, which I never got to see when it was out several months ago, I saw The Materialists with Dakota Johnson, Chris Evans, and the man who's in everything these days, Pedro Pascal. As a piece of entertainment, I was entertained by it. Now, if you take it as a reflection upon where our society is and how shallow people are, it doesn't say much for human society. But even though they try to give you a somewhat happy end, at least for two of the three characters, but it's weird. It does kind of reinforce that Dakota Johnson really isn't much of an actress, or doesn't seem to have much of a range. I don't really think she. I mean, a lot of the either criticism or excuses made for her in Madam Web was because either the material was so bad or they changed the movie so much she just didn't care, kind of like how she was clearly going through the motions when she was promoting that movie. But when I really stop and think about most of the things that I've ever seen her in, she doesn't really seem to have much of a range. Her most memorable performance to me might have been in the Social Network when she was the one who happened to be sleeping with Justin Timberlake's character. What's his face from Napster? That because that's how he discovers Facebook, because she was on Facebook. But other than that, that's it. That's all I got.
Yeah, I don't have anything I've been rewatching stuff and watching a bunch of YouTube. I will say I rewatched the other day just because it popped in my head and I remember I haven't seen it in a few years. Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yeah, I've never actually seen that movie.
Oh, really? You should. It's a fantastic movie. I forgot. I found myself quoting along with almost the entire freaking film. I love that movie. I don't want bop, goddammit. I'm a Dapper Dan, man. Sorry. There's so many quotable moments. They run in George Nelson, Babyface Nelson. They run into George Nelson at one point and he starts firing on the police officers. And then just for the sheer thrill of it, as they're driving, he turns the Gatling gun around and starts shooting at the cattle that they're driving past. And you see bullets just hit this cow. And one of the guys in the car goes, "Oh, George, not the livestock." It's just a bunch of wonderful, wonderful moments like that. And I forgot how great that movie is. And I had such... I spent a good lunch break, because I work from home. I spent a good lunch break just laughing my ass off, which was much needed. Trust me.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Yeah. So if you need a good laugh, yeah. Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou, especially if you haven't seen it. But I think, let's see, what's coming out. Nothing this week, and then next week is Green Lantern 29. That's the week of Thanksgiving.
Yeah, let's see where it goes.
All right. Well, if people want to reach out to us, what do they do?
Lanterncast@gmail.com. The website is lanterncast.com. Excuse me, I'm stretching. You can follow us on Blue Sky, Twitter, like us on Facebook, #geocast to track us down. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you listen to us on. Please leave us a positive review. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a text or a voicemail, 708 Lantern, and let us know what you think.
All right, guys. Good night.
Happy Thanksgiving. Good
night. Bye, everybody.
Bye.